Today on Blue 58, the Packers double and triple dipped on the offensive line and at safety on days 2 and 3 of the 2024 NFL Draft. Was that the right move?
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I'm your host, John Meerdink, and I'm happy to be with you here now that the NFL Draft has come to a conclusion. This episode was supposed to go out yesterday, Sunday. It's Monday now as I record this. We've had an interesting weekend. In addition to the draft, we discovered Friday evening, just as round two was getting started, that there was an enormous puddle of water in our basement underneath the water heater, which usually means that the water heater is cooked. And as we found out this morning, it is. So that was the rest of my weekend in addition to the NFL draft. Hopefully you had a better one. We're fine. It'll be all right. And the Packers are more than all right after concluding the NFL draft. So I figured we'd talk through dates 2 and 3 today and get you some stuff on undrafted free agents tomorrow. Overall, it looks like this was the pick clustering draft. We've talked about this approach for Brian Gutekunst before, even dating back to 2017 when he wasn't running the show but was among the Packers' leading personnel guys. He and the Packers have liked to do this. They like to spend multiple picks on a position when they're just going to sit down and say, we are going to fix whatever it is. We're going to fix safety. We're going to fix linebacker. We're going to get depth on the offensive line. There's a problem at safety. We need a bunch of them. We're going to get a bunch of them, and we did that. We got to have more linebackers. They came out of the draft with more linebackers. We got to have more depth on the offensive line because if the starters are fine on the offensive line, the read on the Packers right now is they could use depth, and they got that in a big way on days 2 and 3 of the draft. You could also look at this draft and say versatility is a hallmark again. It's always a big deal for the Packers. They always want guys that can do multiple things. But both of the offensive linemen the Packers picked on day 3 have extensive experience at multiple spots. Not really just cameo stuff like Jordan Morgan or projection-related stuff. Both Monk and Glover have significant experience at spots other than their primary experience. You could also say this is the draft where, really more than any other in the Brian Gutekunst era, the Packers have drafted for need. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. This is probably the most need-based draft the Packers had since 2018, at least. The Packers had needs coming in on the offensive line at linebacker and safety, and they hammered those. And drafting for need is not a bad thing. You're trying to fill needs. Best player available only works to an extent. You can't just keep hammering receiver or tight end because that's the best available player on your board. At some point, that value does have to win out, I think. But with needs like the Packers have, it never hurts to hammer the positions where you have needs. There have been some takes out there, and you know, I don't want to weigh too heavily on the immediate post-draft takes because they're almost always wrong, including this one. But there are some people out there harping on positional value for the Packers. I get that to an extent. Safety is not usually considered a premium position, though I think it probably should be. But other than Xavier McKinney, the Packers had no legitimate starting caliber safeties on the roster. Anthony Johnson Jr., and I say that as a guy who likes Anthony Johnson Jr., he's not a guy that you want to be your week one starter at one of your two safety spots in this important safety-heavy defense that Jeff Hafley wants to run. So the Packers added more. They got more help at safety because they needed more help at safety, and that's not a bad thing. They needed more depth at linebacker. They got more depth at linebacker, and they added depth on the offensive line, which is never a bad thing to do. Drafting for needs is fine. Drafting the best player available is fine. Whatever your approach is, the only thing you don't want to be doing is chasing, because that's when you end up overspending. It's like we said in the pre-draft process, that's the football version of the gambler's fallacy. You're not due. Like, you're not that smart. Nobody is. Don't chase just because you think that there's a guy that you absolutely have to have. Now, the Packers did trade up to get a guy like Evan Williams, sure. But even so, that it falls into the category of they needed a guy, and that was the guy that fell into their range there. And you also had so many draft picks on day 3 that you couldn't really expect all of them to make the roster anyway, especially those, you know, 6th and 7th round picks. If there is a guy that you like and it's at a position where you do have needs, and the Packers did, you might as well go and get him. So let's talk about days 2 and 3. The first pick on day 2, was Edgerrin Cooper, the linebacker out of Texas A&M. Not the first pick, but the Packers' first pick after a trade down from 41. At pick 45, they grab Cooper, 6'2", 230 out of A&M, 9.26 relative athletic score. The big thing on him is his 40 time, 4.51 in the 40-yard dash. It shows up in the highlights that you've already seen. He's fast. He moves quickly on the field. The broad strokes reaction for me is that it's great to get the consensus top linebacker in the draft if you're going to do it in the middle of the second round. We've gone back and forth on the value of spending any kind of draft capital on linebackers before, but this is a situation where I think value and need trumps the positional value there quite formidably. He's a super-duper athlete. They have a need. He makes a ton of plays on the ball, 20.5 ball hawks. Not tons, but enough to be a tier one guy for us. No real complaints there. When he's on, he's on. He made a ton of plays for Texas A&M this past season. At his best, he's a really, really good player. The bad, you might wonder if the Packers are buying a little bit high here. He's really got one season as a major contributor under his belt. This was by far his best season in college. On the one hand, you know, what do you want? Like, are you really going to drill down beyond his most recent, most successful year if you're trying to really cast aspersions on a prospect? On the other hand, I think you can ask if he's peaking. Like, is this as good as Cooper's ever going to be? He's also a bit on the small side, even by the standards of modern linebackers. Where does he fit next to Quay Walker? More on that in a second. He also has a fairly high missed tackle rate, 12.8%, according to Pro Football Focus, not ideal. But, again, they needed a linebacker, and he was the best one most people thought in the class, and they got him in the middle of the second round after a trade down. There's a lot of reasons that you can go in other directions than disliking this pick. I think it's a solid one. The fit is a little bit of a question. How does he play next to Quay Walker? What are their responsibilities exactly? I think we can only hypothesize about that at this point, so I'm not going to waste too much time on that. I think conservatively, though, he's going to be one of your starting two linebackers if you're running a 4-2-5 nickel sort of scheme that the Packers are probably going to run along with most of the league. Responsibility-wise, I think you got to wonder who's going to wear the green dot, him or Quay. I think it's probably going to be Quay Walker to start it at the very least if they don't think either of them is ever going to come off the field. I do think that's going to be interesting to watch, though, if they ever want to go in a different direction from having Walker wear it. Who do they pick? Is it Cooper? Next pick the Packers made, Javon Bullard, a safety out of Georgia. Took him 58th overall, 5'10.5", 198 pounds. Depending how you view Cooper DeJean, Bullard might be the best safety in the class. Tyler Newbin out of Minnesota up there in the conversation as well. But Bullard was a really, really clean prospect, was a tier two prospect for us just because he didn't make a ton of plays on the ball, but a very, very respectable safety prospect here. And the first thing that comes to mind as you look at him is versatility. It wasn't clear initially what the Packers were going to do with McKinney. The question was, is he just the deep safety, just a box guy, a nickel slot sort of guy? It wasn't really clear. The Packers seemed to indicate it would be a week-by-week thing. So the question then shifts, what do you want to pair with him? Do you want to define McKinney's responsibilities by who you put with him? Or do you want to get a guy that's basically like McKinney and can move around a lot and do a lot of different things? And the Packers pretty decidedly went, at least with this first pick, in the second direction there. They wanted to get somebody like Xavier McKinney, or appeared to want to get somebody like that. They got a guy who does a lot of the things that McKinney can and does do. Bullard played about a quarter of his snaps in 2023 in the slot after playing more than 80% of his snaps there in 2022. Played primarily deep in 2023, but a movable piece, in other words. I think that leads to a situation where you're going to be moving both your top two safeties around a lot, and you don't really need to have defined roles for your top two safeties. If you want to bring in that box guy, you bring in somebody off the bench, and oh, are the Packers going to have opportunities to do that with a couple of their later picks in this draft. Coverage grade-wise, as clean as any safety in the draft. You don't need us to recap all the numbers from our pre-draft process stuff, but really, really good. His coverage grades were really good from Pro Football Focus, and consistently good, too. Again, not just a ton of plays on the ball, 18.5 ball hawks, and also not particularly big by any stretch. Under 5'11", under 200 pounds. He's not as fast as Darnell Savage was, at least in terms of time speed. And I think if you want to be concerned about the size and physicality there, you've got a case. After we watched Darnell Savage get ragdolled for a couple of years, Bullard is at least willing against the run. Savage was willing too, but not always able. That may be a little bit of a concern, but chalk that kind of as a thing I would only ever be moderately concerned about. Yeah, I'm not asking my 190-something pound safeties to be dynamos against the run. Do your job, big guys up front. We're running a true front seven here with four down linemen and three linebackers and a base 4-3. Figure it out before it gets back to the 190-something pound safety. I don't think that's an unfair ask there as well. So I think you're looking at a day one starter here next to Xavier McKinney. A lot of matchup-based moves from there, but I think a really good get for the Packers at 58. Pick number 88 is where I got really excited. Marshawn Lloyd out of USC. Third-round pick for the Packers there. 5'8 and a half, maybe 220 pounds. A little spark plug of a guy. I called him on our pre-draft podcast with Tyler Brook and Justice Mosqueda the most fun running back body type in the draft. His highlights are a blast. It's a lot of fun to have a fun running back. And the Packers needed a guy who I think was more of that speed guy combo breaker for, you know, Josh Jacobs and A.J. Dillon and even Emmanuel Wilson. What if you could have that and also have the heavier guy that Brian Gutekunst seems to like? Well, here's Marshawn Lloyd, who ran a 4.46 40, which is not blazing fast, but he did it at 220 pounds, which gives him a pretty considerable speed score, which is one of the things we use to gauge running backs when we talk through the draft stuff. He was one of just four backs in this class who had a speed score above 110. So if you're hung up on him running only a 4.46 in the 40, which is good, we should say for sure, it's good. It's not great, but it's good. Keep in mind as well that the weight at which he is moving is important, and he's moving at a pretty significant weight there. Running back is about moving mass as much as moving fast. The bad stuff is the fumble. He fumbles a lot. Once every 36 touches in college, it's hard to find a way to spin that. That is a career killer for a lot of guys. Ask former running back draft pick Devontae Mays how that goes for the Packers. But all the other stuff really checks out. I think that we're looking at a situation where the Packers, at least on paper, are going to have functionally two RB2s on the depth chart. You have Josh Jacobs, who's going to be the unquestioned number one guy, but A.J. Dillon is going to be there, at least in the short term. And then you've got Lloyd here, who should come off the bench fairly regularly and will probably have his own role in the offense as well. Tyron Hopper comes up next for the Packers, three picks later at 91, a linebacker out of Missouri. 6'2", about 231 pounds, nearly 6'2", not quite. The broad strokes on this one was, if you look at all the picks that the Packers made, days two and three, even throw Morgan in there from day one, this was the biggest head-scratcher. But I think there are aspects of it that make sense, and we're not privy to everything the Packers are thinking, that all the things that they know. There are reasons to wonder about this pick, but there are reasons, I think, to like it as well. For starters, he's got special teams experience, and I know that's not the most fun thing to say about a guy who you picked in the third round, but he has 500 snaps of special teams experience at Missouri. He's made plays on the ball, 20 and a half ball hawks in his career, just behind Edrian Cooper there, so met our threshold on that one. However, he's a little bit inconsistent. That's the book on Hopper, is that he is inconsistent. Is he an athlete? Well, yes, technically the Packers had him in the high 4.5s in their timing of him, so that makes him a little bit faster than his other measured speed, but it doesn't always show up. Is he a good tackler? Yes, but not always. Pro Football Focus put it this way, quote, "Despite his less impressive measurables, Hopper is a good athlete with potential as a coverage defender and pass rusher. His play speed is a pro and con for him. If he can be more appropriate about when to turn on the jets and when to be patient, he could be a contributing linebacker and special team standout," end quote. As far as the fit, that's where this one really pops up as a question for me. I'm not sure what the Packers do with him here. You've got Quay Walker. He's your top linebacker. You've got Edrian Cooper. He's going to be your second linebacker. Beyond that, now you have Hopper and Eric Wilson and Christian Welch, all primarily special teamers. Is it just who can add the most value on defense, even though we're going to continue to think of you mainly as a special teamer? And we haven't even mentioned Isaiah McDuffie here, who also kind of falls into that category a little bit as well. Are the Packers just looking to cut one of those four guys, knowing that they're going to need to move on from probably two of the three, or maybe all three of those next year, just for contract reasons? I mean, Wilson's back on a one-year deal. McDuffie's in the last year of his deal. I think Welch's deal is a one-year deal. That, are you just replacing those guys? That's something you certainly can do. It's just a little bit odd to see it with a third-round pick. Nevertheless, I think if that's what the Packers are doing, they certainly have their reasons, and Rich Bisaccia maybe can get some value out of Hopper there on special teams. In round four, the Packers go Evan Williams, a safety out of Oregon, pick number 111, 5'11", 200 pounds, just a little bit bigger than Javon Bullard. But here is your box safety, 290 snaps in the box last year, another 165 in the slot, just 271 deep. He plays near the line of scrimmage. And at the Senior Bowl, he was voted the best safety on the national team. Javon Bullard, for just a counterpoint there, was the best safety on the American team. So the Packers continue their trend of loving what goes on at the Senior Bowl and go with Williams here. We got to mention right up top, Williams' nickname, at least as far as this podcast is concerned, is going to be the Bourbonator right after Evan Williams' bourbon. Is it the best bourbon in the world? It's not, but will it get the job done? Absolutely. And maybe that's the way forward for Evan Williams, the safety, much like Evan Williams, the bourbon. I think this is a good example of a redundancy pick here. Better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. In theory, Jeff Hafley wants to have those two different kinds of safeties. That's something we talked about back when he was hired. That's something he wanted his safety room to look like. He wanted guys that could do both things, play deep and play near the line of scrimmage. Ideally, you have somebody who can just do both things. One guy who can do it all, just a super-duper star who can play deep, play near the line of scrimmage. But most of those guys are super high draft picks and aren't available in free agency. So you sign a guy who can do all of those things, but you'll just use in a need-based sort of capacity. And you draft another guy who is kind of along those lines. And there's McKinney and there's Bullard. Williams is a different kind of safety. He's that box guy who's playing near the line of scrimmage. I think that is your other addition to this safety room. Just pick a guy who does that pretty much exclusively. But wait, there's more. We've got another one to talk about here in a couple picks. But Williams, I think, looks like the box safety version of the Packers trying to upgrade their safety position. Size is a question. Athleticism, prior to his pro day, was in the neighborhood of borderline. He was under 8, but then did well at his pro day. It bumped it up above 8. Just a 4.6 range in the 40-yard dash. Did crack 40 inches in the vertical and an elite broad jump and an elite short shuttle. There is good athleticism in his profile. Sometimes, apparently, that doesn't always match his play style. Been described as over-aggressive, though a big hitter, not necessarily a big guy. Sometimes those things are hard to square. It's great to be aggressive. It's great to try to knock people out. But when you're just 200 pounds, the knockout punch isn't necessarily always there. But he fits the bill as a depth safety, a box guy, and a special teamer. We're on day three at this point. It's hard to get too worked up about even a bad choice, and I'm not calling him a bad choice by any stretch of the imagination. Not my favorite day three pick up next, but very close to it. Jacob Monk, the offensive lineman out of Duke. Fifth rounder, pick 163, 6'3", 308 pounds, basically inverted Graham Barton's career at Duke. Barton started inside, then moved out to left tackle, now is considered an inside prospect in the pros. Monk started outside, then ended up at center. He also is considered an inside prospect here in the pros. Was primarily a tackle for Duke in 2019, was a guard in 2020 through 2022, then played center for the Blue Devils this past season in 2023. I love the versatility. Pretty decent athlete, too. He didn't do the agility drills, but he ran pretty well, was under the 1.8 split in the 40 that the Packers generally have looked for, and not for nothing, put up 31 reps on the bench. Not inconsiderable there. Nothing super concerning, I think, pops up in his scouting report. Again, a day three guy, so he's not super big, but 6'3", 320 pounds is plenty big at center. You can get by with that for sure. So he's giving you depth at guard, he's giving you depth at center, and he's providing a guard-center hybrid as opposed to a guard-tackle hybrid, which is where the Packers have skewed generally a little bit in the past. Pure inside, though, I would think for Monk looking forward, I think they've got another good, solid depth piece in Monk here. And what a fun last name to see on a Packers jersey. Favorite day three pick, though, next. Ketan Oladapo, the safety out of Oregon State. Pick 169 overall in the fifth round. 6'2", 216 pounds. Another box safety for you here. So throughout this offseason now, the Packers have added two of each kind of those Hafley safeties. Two guys that are primarily deep but can pop into the slot, can do stuff near the line of scrimmage. In McKinney and Bullard, now two almost exclusive box safeties in Williams and Oladapo. Nearly 75% of his snaps in 2023 came either in the box or in the slot. He loves to play near the line of scrimmage, and that's what he's good at. If you're looking for your athletic, big-bodied safety who's always playing near the line of scrimmage and makes plays on the ball, well, in Oladapo, you've got check, 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 check there. He's athletic, above 8 in relative athletic score. Big, 6'2", 216 is plenty big. Playing near the line of scrimmage, we told you about his snap counts. 36.5 ball hawks making plays on the ball. You're not going to find better than that in the fifth round in terms of that package of what you're looking for. He's your big nickel. He's your Tariq Carpenter, what he was supposed to be in Green Bay. He's basically what Oren Burks was supposed to be. Maybe the second coming of Morgan Burnett playing near the line of scrimmage. Maybe what Josh Jones was supposed to be in Green Bay. I don't know. You can go on. The Packers have tried to find that guy for a while. Maybe Oladapo is that guy. He certainly has all the hallmarks. Sometimes, if you're looking for bad stuff about this particular pick, these guys can tend to be a little bit unsophisticated as actual safeties. They don't always project pretty well. Sometimes you just put them near the line of scrimmage and have them run around because, well, they're big and they cause a lot of chaos. They fit in that real aggressive kind of gadfly mold as a defender. I've told the story a few times of the defense that our team used in college. This was a designated position. They just called them the Dogs. And there was all guys that were like the small school version of this. So he's 6'2", 216. These guys were like, I don't know, 5'10 to 6 feet tall, 190 to 200 pounds. But every single one of them that was on the roster was just mean as heck and liked to hit people and would stick their nose in there. They were the guys in grade school. They were always coming in from recess, out of breath, dirty, and with skinned knees. You know the exact kind of person I'm talking about if you've ever met somebody like that. And they are just a pain to play sports against because they do not care about you at all. They're just out there having fun. And to them, having fun is running into stuff and just trying to jar loose whatever they can. That's how Oladapo seems to operate. That's how this sort of role seems to operate. It's a tough one to project, I think, into the NFL, but he has the hallmarks of a guy who could project pretty well, and like Williams, fits the bill as box safety depth and a special teamer. I think he's going to excel at those things. Travis Glover up next out of Georgia State, 6 feet, 6 inches tall, 318 pounds at pick number 202. Another big versatile option. He played both guard and tackle at Georgia State. His overall athleticism isn't great. But he's versatile, a guard and tackle build, gives you some interior depth, maybe can kick outside if he has to. I think you'd probably just stick him inside if that's what he's most comfortable with. And you've got more competition inside and outside. If he's competing at both guard and tackle, that's a good place to be in. Royce Newman, I think you're on the watch list here a little bit. The Packers just added another guy here who can play guard and tackle. $3 million in cap savings might be coming the Packers' way, if you understand my meaning there, as far as Royce Newman is concerned. Two more picks to go for the Packers. First is Michael Pratt, the quarterback out of Tulane. Pick 245, late seventh rounder. 6'2.5", 217 pounds. Here's Brian Gutekunst's quarterback draft pick. He checks, I think, a lot of the boxes of the potentially promising late-round quarterback who at least won't screw it up for you type candidate. He is a longtime starter, 44 starts over 4 years for Tulane. He had consistent improvement over his time there, got more and more accurate over every single season, and I understand that part of that could be offensive changes. I won't claim to be an expert on the University of Tulane football, go Green Wave, and successful. It was a record setter at Tulane, for whatever that's worth. Again, no knocks on the Green Wave. I love Tulane, love playing with them on NCAA, some of the best college football uniforms, I think, out there. Love the combination of green and Columbia blue or powder blue, whatever you want to call it. They look sharp. And Pratt was one of the better quarterbacks in their history. Is he the biggest guy, the strongest guy, big arm, something like that? Not necessarily, but at least he's a long-term competent starter who probably isn't going to screw it up for you, much in the vein of a Sean Clifford in college. Just checks all the boxes of the nice college starting quarterback. The ceiling may not be that high. It rarely is for day three quarterbacks. It probably wasn't for Clifford last year. It certainly isn't for Pratt this year. But if you're looking for depth at quarterback, and if he turns into anything at all, it's a plus thing for you. Gutekunst wanted to have one, and took him with one of the 12 picks that they had, or whatever number it ended up being with the trade-ups and stuff. They had plenty of draft capital available. He wanted a quarterback, so he got one. Finally, the Packers round out the seventh round by drafting Kalen King, a defensive back out of Penn State. 255, the pick number 255. He doesn't weigh 255. He weighs 191 pounds to go with his 5'11 height there. A bit of an enigma with a potentially very promising upside. He was outstanding in 2022 after his 2022 season was projected by many as a potential first-round pick after 2023, but then things don't go so well for him in 2023 at Penn State, and he fell and fell hard. Third-to-last pick in the draft sort of fall there, but was very good in 2022. His grades were off the charts. Pro Football Focus said this of him, quote, displayed such good athleticism in 2022 that he didn't even need to get hands on receivers to mirror them in press, end quote. That is some fairly high praise. Also has pretty good ball skills. 33 ball hawks over his time at Penn State, including 28 passes defensed, but a very, very up and down career. Truly horrific combine workout for a corner as well. A 4.61 in the 40 at the combine. He improved that to 4.55 at his pro day, which is not great, but certainly better than anything that starts with a 6 in the second digit there. But even so, at 5'11", 4.55 puts him pretty close to that saying we repeat every year at this time. You can be small and you can be slow, but you can't be small and slow. Pick one. Pretty close to both there for Kalen King, just right out of the box. However, I think there's a case to be made that he could be better for the Packers than he was in college. The most convenient explanation, put it that way, about the reason he fell off so hard in 2023 from 2022 is that he was playing across from Joey Porter Jr. in 2022, but didn't have that same kind of support in 23. Whoever he ends up playing opposite in Green Bay will be better than whoever he was playing opposite in Penn State. Could this be another Carrington Valentine? I can say Valentine, I promise you. A Carrington Valentine type pick? There we go. I think it could be. That's the hope, certainly. He has all the hallmarks of a guy who certainly can be very good. Just a question of whether or not the Packers get that version of this guy. An interesting, interesting reclamation project for the Packers, though. Overall, I like this class. I like what the Packers did in the draft here. Added depth everywhere. Got two of the top players at their respective positions in the second round in Cooper and Bullard. They added a fun running back. There is a lot to like here. I don't really have any complaints. The one complaint I do have is that this year's draft class is going to be a big referendum on how we do draft prep at Blue 58 and the Power Sweep, because many of these guys were guys that we not only talked about, but spoke about very well. Ketan Oladapo was up there. Edgerrin Cooper is up there. Javon Bullard's up there. Marshawn Lloyd is up there. Those are guys that we praised in the pre-draft process. Four of them ended up in Green Bay. If they end up busting, we might have to think about doing some things considerably differently. But they are guys that we thought were good and would be worthwhile picks for the Packers. And the Packers added four of them. It seems like a vote of confidence in the way we do things. If they don't end up working out, we might have to reevaluate things here a little bit in a couple of years. But that's a couple of years away. And I think there's a lot to like about this draft class. We'll see what happens. Rookie minicamp coming down the pipe already later this week. In the meantime, that's all I've got for you in this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I'd appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. That's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation you and I are having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.